Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 176. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Hey, hot, hot, hot Minnesota.
And Phil Wilson.
Guten Morgen.
And our buddy Tim Elliott is off. He just had plastic surgery, and he's decided.
You may have seen him now in his new look, Marissa Meyer.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. We all want some of that.
Yeah. He'd like a $100 million package.
Yeah. Oh, I was wondering, gosh, though, does she get free lunches too?
Oh yeah. And yeah, she gets to ride around, in a luxury limo and all sorts of things.
A purple luxury limo.
I'll bet. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we got a couple of reports to do, but let's just talk about that for a second, about her taking this slot. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, it was a coup by the board. What's that guy's name? Loeb. He pushed for somebody that was product focused. You know, they mm-hmm. really thought he really thought they didn't want another media type. And I guess I would have to agree, because when you think about it, why the hell would you want somebody from the media industry, which is so screwed up anyway? You
know? Hey.
And it's Semmel, you know, remember Terry Semmel? Look how he raped and pillaged that company. And, you know, how many CEOs have they been through? You know, they tried Carol Bartz, bring in how to describe her. She wasn't media. She was tech. So there's one failed tech CEO. What is
it? Was it six CEOs in 5 years or 5 and 6 years?
I've lost track. But this Levinson, who everybody thought with the interim guy was going to get the nod, he sure got a flat board to the side of the head. You know,
yeah,
it's like, whoops.
So
it was a shocker to everybody. But, you know, when you read the background, I mean, she had really been passed over, Marissa had, at Google. And she, you know, she'd really kind of reached the end of her useful tenure over there, I think, you know. And apparently the products she had were legacy stuff. I mean, she wasn't even responsible for any of the new exciting stuff, you know. Nonetheless, she gets high marks from most people and, you know, my post. My friends Leif and Joel Shriver here, Leif Larson and Joel Shriver, think highly of her, which is not surprising at all to me. But the tech industry, Michael Arrington on down, was just glowing about her coming over. But then did you read the post by Nick Carlson at Business Insider about the other side of Marissa? I mean, you know, leave it to the journalist, dig out the dirt. You know, apparently there's some people that didn't enjoy working for her all that much. And she's a pretty demanding sort. And,
well, but, the one thing that article didn't talk about that people did in the comments was the fact that, hey, look, when a lot of this stuff happened, she was in her late 20s.
Yes.
And so she's, you know, people mature.
Yep.
And,
why is this a big problem? You know, Steve Jobs is a complete ass, yet he's still one of the most respected CEOs ever. So,
yeah.
don't give a girl a hard time.
No, and there's no way she can live up to being a bitch like Carol Bartz was.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, my question is, what the hell are you going to do with Yahoo?
Yeah, really?
Well,
okay,
you know,
so, she's a fine CEO. But the question is, what the hell are you going to do with Yahoo?
Yep, she better have a plan. I mean, she wouldn't have taken the position unless she's confident that she can do something here. And now they're saying she could get up to $100 million in stock if she hangs around 5 years. So, you know, she's got
it. So what happens to that if they don't let her hang around 5 years? We're talking about a board that's gone through 6 and 5 years. So
then she only gets like 60. You know,
that's another
poor thing.
Minimize then, you know, and buy her own lunches.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, what I find interesting is I never use Google. I never use Yahoo
Nobody uses Yahoo
as a front end. But I do use Flickr. I mean, I still am on Flickr, and it's just because it's, you know, I've got all my stuff's tied into it, and I've got all these photo sets there and so forth. But I've often thought, how come I don't ever use Yahoo?
Yeah, well, me too.
And it wouldn't be that tough for you to move that stuff over to Picasa. So
that's true.
You know, yeah, we're locked in.
Well, not really, though.
Well, it's hard, though, to move that many photos, isn't it? I mean, I got like 8,000 or something up on Flickr.
Well, but see, I use I used to use iPhoto, and now I use Aperture. And so all my sets are set up in Aperture, and all I'd have to do is use a new service and click a button, and they'd all go up.
Right? Oh, really?
It'd take a long time. But
yeah.
Yeah. So it wouldn't be that tough, but
Flickr is an example of a product that a lot of people feel that they just let languish, and
it
and,
has languished. And,
sure,
absolutely,
it's just sitting there, which is probably the one that's holding things up. So, but I don't know if there's any money in Flickr for them.
No, I pay
$24.95 a year for a pro account.
Yeah.
Of course, LinkedIn wants that from you per month. Those bastards.
Yeah,
and I won't pay. Damn, hey, not that much. $24.95 a year, I might pay, but you know they keep trying to suck me in with that $24.95 a month. Oh, see who viewed your profile. You know, not for $24.95 a month, I won't.
I know. Well, and you know what? The thing that amazes me is I've added up all the little services that I pay. So I pay Google for more storage in Gmail. I pay, you know, $10 here, $10 there. All of a sudden you look at your credit card statement. It's like, geez, I got like, you know, $240 a month in just services. And it's crazy.
Pretty soon it's getting close to like what AT&T gets out of it.
Yeah. I pay $230 or $240 a month for a four phone family plan. But, well, hey, let's segue. Graham, what happened at this Minnesota Cup pitch that was at Digital River?
Well, it was very, very nice. I'm glad I caught it, and I'd never been to the new Digital River headquarters. Wow. Over there in Opus. Have you guys seen that? Wow. They've been there about a year. I guess I had no idea they'd even moved, but a very impressive facility. And we were on sort of the lower level facing, it was a cafeteria kind of a thing. And of course all the employees were gone because it was a late afternoon evening event, and they catered it to the hilt. I mean, hat tip to Joel Ronning. He really pulled out the stops to host this thing. And there were probably 50 or 60 people there, mostly angels and mentors, for the Minnesota Cup program. And of course, many of the semifinalist participants were there. And it was 11 companies pitching. I got there a little late, kind of barely caught the end of the first one. I'll tick them off here real quick. Some of them I had never heard of because they're not necessarily in the high-tech category, which is what I pay attention to. But we had Buyer Curious. We had Connect to Me. We had Cora Cove, Heroic, whom I know, Mashalot, whom I know, Patent Core was really interesting, Point Stack, Precious Status, which is another one I'd never heard of, Prolific, I'd heard of, Telemetry Web, of course, we know those guys, and a company, a startup that was called Tinder Docs that just changed its name to Docalytics, D-O-C-Y. L-I-T-I-C-S. You'd like this one. Evan Carruthers. But anyway, so 11 of them had, I don't know if it was 6-minute pitches, something like that. And then they took questions from the audience. And some of the angels and VCs and mentors asked some pretty hard questions. You know, it had to move along pretty quickly, and we couldn't dwell too long on any particular topic. And then John Stavig from Carlson School was the host of the event. And then we had a little reception afterwards and lots of good schmoozing and catching up with people. So an impressive event and some pretty interesting startups. I was most impressed with two I had not heard from before, and that was PatentCore and Precious Status. PatentCore is a patent attorney who's figured out a way to build a database of what's going on with your patent application, because heretofore it's been like unknown, even to the damn patent attorneys. They don't know what's going on with
their
application.
They have to keep checking, yeah.
Yeah, well, this guy's figured out a way that people can actually monitor what's going on, and they I guess there's 8,000 patent examiners, and they like have the goods on all of them, like what they do, how they operate, how long they take, all this kind of thing. So I think this guy's onto something. And then Precious Status is a way for caregivers to stay in touch with the people whose relatives are being cared for, whether it's child care or elder care. And this lady, Julie Gilbert Newry, was really sounds like she's got an impressive business going, and has been pretty stealth up till now. So those were some interesting ones, and of course all the other tech guys have some great things going on too. So good event from Minnesota Cup again, and kudos to Dan Mallon and Scott Littman.
As always, yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
They put together just a great event. And Phil, you went to the MEMA event this week.
Yeah,
right?
that was Wednesday morning at the Scandinavian facility. I'm sorry,
Swedish.
The Swedish American Institute. Very nice.
Oh, it's a beautiful building in a bad neighborhood.
Beautiful place. We had a wonderful turnout. Disappointing to find out that we turned out for something that really wasn't what was advertised. So Pandora had the stage. They were supposed to talk about multi-platform integration and strategy and mobile, and they basically pitched Pandora. So
really?
Yeah, it was a salesperson. So so all they did was just basically run through the slide deck, and it was many of us were sitting there going, wow, this is... We really felt sorry for the folks at MEMA, because obviously the person from Pandora, as good as she was at talking about Pandora, obviously hadn't read the description of what the talk was supposed to be about. So, it was just one of those things. It happens. I mean, I was, we do Mobile March every year, and on occasion somebody will get in there and this is what I'm going to talk about, and this is the description for the session, and that's not what it is. So. I'm sure that the folks at MEMA were a little bit disappointed with that particular pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
Pandora is doing very well. One of the big things that I noticed was, Pandora doesn't make any money. I mean, they're losing money on a regular basis because of the sound exchange fees for the music. The more music they play, or the more people that use the service, the more expensive that service, the music is for Pandora to supply. So they have to make their money with another model, and advertising obviously is the next option. But they do very few ads in stream, and so she, during her pitch, she mentioned, we're not really all about making a lot of money. I'm thinking, I'm sure your investors love to hear that sort of thing.
Pandora.org.
Yeah, they're going nonprofit. It was not intentional.
But. Yeah, we're not into making a lot of money. What?
was this a locally based salesperson? Did they have?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, they built out quite the team. I knew the senior VP of ad sales at Pandora, Cheryl Lucanegro, and I see... She's recently switched over to what must be a new startup called SoundHound. in San Francisco. So maybe that tells you something.
Well, and I knew Les Hollander, who was also a high-ranking person in Pandora sales, and he's no longer with Pandora.
Yeah, that, you know, I mean, they're running up against a real problem. I mean, Wall Street, you know, they've got problems being a public company if they can't get profitable, and it's the cost of the damn music, you know.
Well, I spoke with, you know, I interviewed Tim Westergren, geez, had to be 5-6 years ago when Pandora was just, well, I think it was even before they went public, but, and, you know, the one thing that I can't quite understand is, and this is how she, you know, she sort of rolled out her pitch, is their mission is to redefine radio, which strikes me as, well, that's kind of a stupid mission. Why don't you just define, you know, online music services? Because, you know, when you look at Pandora and you compare it to radio, and radio is probably equally guilty of this, is radio is just not a pile of songs. It really isn't. And the mistake that media has made and radio has made, and I think Pandora is making, is to think of, well, we want to be a giant jukebox. I think that Pandora is a music discovery service and a music service. It's not radio.
Right.
And
they got the wrong mission.
I think they got the wrong mission. I think obviously it is a big competitor to radio simply because it takes time away from, you know, it takes ear time. It's not radio. I don't think they should try to sell it as radio. I think they should sell it as Pandora. And I think that requires a rethink. And I hate to say it, it's going to require commercials. So
Yeah. Well, it's a very nice experience. I mean, I love my Bob Dylan channel on Pandora, and I love my my surf channel, surf music channel, or whatever. Do they call them channels? What the hell do they call them?
Yeah.
But I don't listen to it often. And isn't Spotify just really coming on strong? I mean,
well, can I just interject? Because my daughter, Liz, she loves every genre of music, I swear. Mm-hmm. And this girl's got, you know, 2 terabytes worth of music. I mean, it's just unbelievable. No, seriously. And so she started using Pandora at length.
All paid then, for, I'm sure, right?
Of course, yeah.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so when the Spotify app came out for the iPhone, she downloaded it and she started toying with it. Well, now she's gone all Spotify. She still listens to Pandora, but she loves Spotify because she can share playlists with her friends. And so they, you know, they come up with all kinds of different stuff and she just loves that. Well, that's the good news, I guess, for Spotify. The bad news for us is I said to her last month, honey, it's 6 days into the month and you've already used 2.2 gigabytes worth of data. And she goes, what? How could that possibly be? I said, well, it's because you're listening to music constantly. That's why.
Sure.
And well, streaming, I mean,
Spotify is going to have the same issue that Pandora has. Any music-based service is going to have the same issue that Pandora has.
But my point,
it sucks up the bandwidth. But also, every time you share that list, it costs Spotify more money because that is now going to be played somewhere else.
Right.
There's one more ear. That's one more tick on the, oh gosh, I got to pay the fees on that as well. So
I never thought of it that way, but yeah, that sounds like a real problem.
It is a problem because I mean, it's a problem you can't, and I don't know how to get around it. And somebody is going to have to deal with it with BMI, ASCAP, and SoundExchange. They're just going to have to because, you know, no business should, you know, cost should never outpace growth. I mean, growth should mean more revenue, and it doesn't. It means more cost. So that's something that they need to figure out.
Well, I'll tell you, just looking at, you know, some of the streaming video services, you know, twit.tv comes to mind right away, Leo Laporte's thing that, you know, they've got deals with Cashfly for streaming. And I mean, I don't know what their deals are specifically because I've never really read anything where they've dug into the cost structure. But that's the number one thing that I look at when you think about what it would cost to stream to potentially hundreds of thousands of people simultaneously. And who's going to do that and what's it going to cost?
Right.
And how do you build that into your model? Because that was one of the nice things about Livestream, formerly Mogulus, the TV station, you know, as a SaaS offering, mm-hmm. is that they had a free version that it was ad driven, and then they had a paid for version, but then you'd have to buy based on how many viewers you would have. Well, who knows? Mm-hmm. If the thing goes viral, you could go from expecting you're going to have 1,000 viewers and then all of a sudden you have 10,000. Now your cost model just goes out the window. And I think that's one of the limiting factors, one of the gating factors to all of this, because when any of us write a business plan, when any startup writes a business plan, you've got to figure out what your base costs are. And you got to be able to do projections. And you got to build a model that says, okay, well, if I do get 10,000, then I'm going to make even more. And then, so the percentage is going to remain relatively the same, or it's going to fall as things scale. But that's the thing I look at with all these models, whether it's Spotify or Pandora or, the Minivate Gang podcast, if we were, had millions of listeners, it'd be the same
we
sort
don't.
Of thing. Yeah, I know. I know it's a surprise.
We have million of listener.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll get more female listeners now that we put the Marissa Meyer story right at the top.
Yeah, that could be. And then they'll have to listen to that sexist
we can only pig, hope.
Phil Wilson. Okay.
What?
Anyway.
Well, wait a minute. What did I say that was sexist?
No, I'm kidding you.
No.
So Microsoft took a $6 billion write-down on that Aquantive ad acquisition, so they posted a loss. But they're going to have this Windows 8 launch in October. And Graham, you put in the show notes that you're going to be in line early. Were you being facetious?
Yeah, like heck I did. Yeah, they're coming down to sink or swim time with the Surface Tablet and Windows 8. They're supposed to be coming out together, right?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Well, they got a lot riding on that, don't they?
Like everything, maybe?
Yeah, like the farm, They're betting the farm. But... yeah, I won't be anywhere near the store. I know that.
Well, they're going to be incorporating, and I'm assuming it's going to happen around Windows 8 time, in the next iteration of Office, where they're going to bake Skype in to Office as a VoIP communication protocol, and it'll be inside Outlook. And that, in theory, will be something that every Skype user will be interested in, maybe enhance communication. I don't know.
Yeah. So that will be interesting. It sounds good on paper, but then everything from them always sounds good on paper, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, I don't know, I'll put this in the show notes too, but Wired Magazine had an article about how the FBI wants back doors in Facebook, Skype, and instant messaging and Twitter. Huh. And that Microsoft in 2009 filed a patent for web-based spying technology, but it was really all about stuff like Skype. And I've been reading some analysis. I'll see if I can find this about backdoors in Skype that already exist. And none of us know because it's proprietary code. You really can't get in and dig around and figure out what's in there. And so they're probably listening right now. So let's use the keywords. Ready? Terror. Bombing.
Hello, FBI.
Well, that's one more listener.
Maybe there's a female agent.
Could be more than
that's,
one.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, now our account's going to go way
huddled
up.
Huddled around in some shack, some van somewhere. Listening
down by
to
the river.
Van
oh, man.
Tell your friends, boys.
Oh, gosh.
So what was this... this high-tech headstone thing. This was
I found out about this. You know, I work with Tom Sweeney over at Visiting Hours. That service for folks that are, that want to stay connected with seniors and that sort of stuff via Skype or video conferencing. And he was at a presentation where he was telling me about the high-tech headstones. And I guess this is a local a local company offers this. You can have a QR code installed on a grave marker, and that obviously can link to, you know, a biography or an obituary or I don't know, something that from the person interred there. Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting.
I saw this actually in the paper.
Yeah.
Or I should say the Star Tribune iPad app. I thought this was kind of interesting, but you know what it boils down to though too is the company that's serving this. So, you know, when you think about Caring Bridge, what a great service that is, and the fact that they're hosting it. So as long as they're around, those pages will be live. And if Katzman Monuments, who's done this, is willing to keep the pages alive and keep those things served, then in perpetuity, then it is pretty cool. But I always worry about this stuff because I've even talked to my wife about the fact that, you know, when I die, you know, keep my blog intact. You know, don't get rid of it, because I think about how cool it would be, you know, if any of us could look at our great great grandparents' blogs, mm-hmm. you know, from back in the 1800s. Every once in a while, I've come across letters, or my dad's got a box with a journal in it that was my grandmother's. You know, stuff like that is just priceless, and so it'd be really cool if there was a QR code. Then, but you know, 100 years from now, is it still going to be served?
Yeah, but wouldn't this be great that if you had a QR code, if you had part of your will included that you had to have a QR code on your grave marker or monument of some kind, you could basically plan ahead and you could do a series of videos where you continue to nag your kids from beyond the grave.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Elizabeth and Alex, have you guys washed your cars?
So every time they take a shot of that QR code and it links, it triggers a new video. And, you know, you'd be like, well, this is obviously visit number 5. Thanks for hanging in with me, you know.
That's right.
Oh, gosh.
That would be good.
I'm telling you, it'd be great.
There are actually several startups that are dealing with this kind of stuff, you know, like how you live on after you die. I remember being at demo one year. One of the demo events 3 or 4 back, there were like at least 2 or 3 of these kind of startups that are, you know, that were based on that. I can't remember their names. They may be long gone, you know.
Well, it's just this, you know, this stuff living on forever. I remember back in, this had to be in the 80s. We did a promotion. We were putting together a promotion when I was back in rock radio where we basically gave away eternal life.
How'd that work?
It. And the concept was, and we basically bought an insurance policy that lived on, and over the years we would pay for cryo freezing, so that if you passed away, your body would be frozen and kept until something came along. But we took a lot of heat for that, believe me. But I look at these things and I think about, well, but now even the Publishers Clearinghouse is doing that. If you've seen the ads for Publishers Clearinghouse, now you can win $5,000 a week. But when you die, you can bequeath that $5,000 a week to somebody else. This whole concept of basically living forever or supplying something forever is quite prolific now.
Well, but you know, this kind of stuff is going to become more and more important because of the baby boomers retiring. You know, for people born between 1945 and 1964, 76 million people. So by 2026 or 2025 or something, there'll be over 70 million people retired in this country.
I'm in that zone. I tell you, I'm not going to be retired.
Okay. Well, you know, and an interesting stat is that I think either AARP or the Kauffman Foundation says that over 55 entrepreneurs over 55 is actually the most active group of entrepreneurs launching new ventures.
Well, that's because nobody will hire them.
Of course, it might be just due to the sheer numbers, too. But that's an interesting wrinkle in this whole thing as well.
Well, and it was interesting because people typically that are 55 plus have more disposable income. Their kids are grown. usually they're through college. And so, you know, in theory, you know, it's just like when you're in your early 20s and I love the Robert Stevens story about six guys in one apartment. He's living on ramen noodles. Yeah. You know, you can do that when you're in your 20s because you don't, I mean, you got nothing else. You don't have a wife you have to, or a husband that you have to do things with and, you know, and so on. You don't have a lot of responsibilities. Same thing when you get 55 plus, it's the same sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, but you got to stay away from ramen because you're trying to keep that your carbs down. So
That's true.
Because, you know, yeah, you're actually
diet ramen.
You got your elevated cholesterol by that time. So,
But I do see, you know, when you think about what's happening with devices, tablets and smartphones, and how it's getting easier and easier and easier and easier. For people to say, oh, geez, I want to have five apps on here that are my social apps, and I want to have email, and I want to have a web browser. And they can do, everyone, can do 90% of what most people are going to do. I mean, I doubt most, you know, people that are 50, 60, 70 are going to be needing FTP applications, you know, stuff like that. And it opens up some new possibilities, I think, for communication apps and everything else. There's actually one app that is called Family Ribbon, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And you can sign up for a web account, and then you can be the admin. And then within the app itself, you can launch Skype video, you can have photo albums, email, you know, videos, and so forth inside that one app. And the only thing I don't like about it is the fact that, you know, it'll launch different apps. So when you touch the Skype button, it'll launch the Skype app on your tablet. So that's maybe a downside. But it's that sort of really, really simple start screen stuff that I think is going to just blow the doors open.
Yep.
on use.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you look at the iPad, when you look at older people using the iPad, it's just amazing. I mean, I've seen it, and we've talked about this before in the Apple store. You know, people bring their elderly grandparents in, right. And you can see them, you know, just lighting up when they use the thing, you know. I mean, we're going to see more and more use, I think, in that age group. You know, of tablets, obviously, kids older people both, you know.
Well, then as the generations flip, you know, there's more. I mean, anyone, I think, now 50 or below is pretty doggone tech savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get into retirement age, it'll be the same thing. I mean, it'll be like whatever. They won't bat an eye using any of these technologies.
Will they have a Surface tablet, though? That's the question.
Well.
Sorry, Steve.
Yeah,
Ballmer,
I don't know. I know.
You never know.
I wonder about these things.
So talk to me, Graham, about, or talk to us or our listeners, how about that, about this this app.net.
App.net. Oh,
what's
this
the scoop
is,
on this?
To me, this was the most exciting thing happening in the tech community, the national tech community this last week is Dalton Caldwell's audacious proposal. And the link is in the show notes. This is a serial entrepreneur in the Valley. I'm trying to remember what his previous one was. He did Pick Please. So he's had a couple of failed startups. He's tried hard, raised a lot of money. Pick Please, you know, shut down. So I had to post my Pick Please photos on the other one. What do you call it? Instagram. Yeah, the one I use all the time, which I can't even think of the name of. But anyway, he came out. He's had this company called App.net, which he is now redirecting to build a paid Twitter. Okay. He, like many people, think Twitter lost it when they went the ad route versus the API route. The API guys lost. Many of them left, and they made a commitment to go the ad in the direction of advertising as a business model. A lot of people really don't like that. And he came out with a proposal that said, you know what? I'm going to build what Twitter should have been. And it's an extremely bold move. And he's got a really competent team and a lot of money behind him. I'm sure that will happen. He hasn't raised yet. But what he did was he launched a Kickstarter-like project for people to sign up. You can join .app.net, I think is the URL.
Yeah, I just put it in the show notes.
And I did. I'm real interested in this, but I'm you know, so I committed for $50 for my first year subscription, and I think he's trying to raise $500K. Anyway, it's getting a huge amount of discussion. Go look at Dalton C on Twitter. The conversation this guy has going, I tweeted the other day, this is the best damn read in the whole startup world right now. And the guy is keeping up an amazing pace of conversation with everybody about this.
And say that again. Where is it?
Alton C is his Twitter handle.
Okay. Okay.
And it's all based on, hey, let's put the customer first here. You know, I mean, where, you know, you can control your own, you know, your own presence online and don't have to be beholden to all the advertisers, you know. So my first thought was, oh my gosh, it'd be cool if we could get him to speak at the Data Venue event in early August. And we're trying, actually. And, you know, I hooked him up with Doc Searles, who's speaking at that event, and, you know, which is all about the customer first and controlling your own, you know, online presence, your own data, you know, your own personal data. But anyway, yeah, the conversation, this guy is pretty amazing. That I guess he's a former, Y Combinator startup. He's very well connected in the Valley. And I mean, you talk about a guy that's putting it out there and laying it all out. And he says, I'm gonna do this. And he said, it's either going to work or it isn't. But it's like, you know, he's got the gonads to go out and try it and do it.
Yeah.
I have no doubt he's going to get the 500K. But it's interesting. People are asking, well, why didn't you do it on Kickstarter? Well, apparently Kickstarter's terms of service won't allow what he's trying to do. And he said, you know, we love Kickstarter, but we can't do it there, so we're doing it on our own. And
yeah, their focus is really finished goods or finished apps or finished product rather than – really what he's building is a platform.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kickstarter is also very much focused on creative and films. I saw the numbers the other day. Holy crap. It's way, way high in the film category. But anyway, but look at app.net and DaltonCaldwell.com. Audacious proposal.
The business model for this again is
subscription
only.
Yeah, it's a paid service for mobile app developers. So it's they're going to have a bunch of developer tools and it's a platform with APIs and all of that to essentially allow people to take this user-centric Twitter-like communication capability and put it into their own apps.
Yep.
And so if they get huge developer
buy-in
and traction, we could quickly see something. We could see a lot of apps come out that have this baked in. And apps may do it anyway. They may say, well, okay, we'll do Twitter and we'll do this and just hedge their bets.
Yeah. Is there any reason to believe, and I know this is the cynic in me, you know, is there any reason to believe the exit strategy for Dalton is to sell to Twitter?
Well, on the surface, you would think that couldn't happen because he's taking the opposite, you know, he's taking the subscription approach and they've chosen, they're committed to the advertising approach. So I wouldn't see that happening. But Steve, I was going to say, it's not just for developers. It is for developers to build apps for this platform. But the deal that he's offering is you can sign up as a user for $50. Developers sign up for $100 with this fundraising.
Okay. I haven't studied it yet.
And you're right. It totally depends on how many developers they can attract to the ecosystem. But these guys, this team, Dalton and his team, have a pretty damn good following in the developer community.
Right.
And a lot of cred, you know. So.
And a cool name, Dalton Caldwell. He sounds like
a British writer or something. Yeah.
or Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
Holden Caldwell.
Caulfield.
So follow that one. And oh my gosh, if we could get him to come to Minneapolis in early August, I think that would be just killer, you know. And he actually showed some interest. You know, I was conversing with him on Twitter. The guy's, you know, he told me yesterday on Twitter, he said, I don't know how long I can keep up this pace. You know, I mean, it's like, it is the hugest conversation I think I've ever seen on Twitter, an ongoing, I mean, it's days long now. He came out with this last Friday night, which I think
he's at 67,000 right now in his fund. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
500,000.
That isn't bad in 5 days. And I was going to say he started it Friday night, which I thought was a beautiful strategy because he got a lot of Saturday morning buy-in on that thing. So we'll see where it goes. I think it's extremely interesting. And I admire his
audaciousness, right?
Yeah, and willingness to take a risk and put it out there, you know.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Say, this is totally out of the blue, but I just wanted to get your take on this, Phil.
Uh-oh.
Because you're a huge Hootsuite user, right?
I am a Hootsuite user. I don't know if I'm a huge Hootsuite.
Okay, well, whatever. But I just saw an announcement that they had incorporated Google+.
Oh yeah, I saw.
And have
that.
You taken advantage of that?
No, not as of yet. But you know, it's just a matter of time because Google+ is becoming. And that's interesting. I had a meeting. Was part of a meeting with Google+ this week, with Google this week locally. And you know that really the big thing about Google+, right, other than you know if you're on Google+, don't talk about Google+. Is that it's the only social media that is being indexed by Google, right?
Yeah.
So that's the big doings. So if you've got any kind of SEO strategy, Google+ now plays a big part in it. Well, in talking with Google, they don't really know how Google+ is going to impact your page rank. So that's kind of a
really okay.
It's very interesting because it's okay. So you want us to use Google+. So tell me what is the best way for me to impact my page rank by using Google+. I don't know.
Interesting.
So
well, but our friend Lee Auden would have a lot to say about that, I'm sure. And
I'm sure he's dug into it deeply already.
We'll be hearing a lot of that. It's probably in his new book. Optimized book.
You know, the one thing is that I've sat through webinars, sat through a webinar with Chris Brogan, who is obviously, you know, he's on the Google+ bandwagon, and I believe he's being compensated for that.
I didn't know that. Oh.
I sat through, I think so.
He better disclose that.
I don't know. I haven't looked at it, to tell you the truth. But, I'm sorry. I don't believe somebody bails that quickly without having some sort of incentive to do so. But anyway, that sounds like an indictment, doesn't it? I'm sorry.
Well,
don't mean to make it an indictment, but I wonder.
He is over the top on pushing Google+. I mean,
but anyway, I sat through a Google+ for Business webinar that he put together. And it was like, I walked away from it by saying, okay, but that doesn't really tell me how I'm going to impact my SEO and how I'm going to impact my page rank, which is important to everybody's SEO strategy. So I don't know. I still haven't. It's very much the wild, wild west as to, okay, what's going to work best for your growth on Google+, and what will that growth mean to you in the Google search world. So
I like that wild west analogy. Ghost town, wild west.
Yeah, could be very much the same. Yeah. Very much the same. So I don't know. Well, it is really turning out to be the one social network that you're being forced to use if you want to continue a search strategy. So,
I guess maybe that's not all bad.
No, I suppose not. And look, we had a lot of fun with the Hangout last week. So maybe it's got some legs.
You know, I got to tell you that the only advantage to the Hangout is being able to have people watch live. But, you know, from a quality standpoint, from a control standpoint, it's just, I just shudder at how that comes across. And I don't know. I just, the one thing that I thought was interesting is there was a huge debate on a Twit video podcast where they were talking about Google Hangouts and on air, the broadcast capability. And one of the things they talked about was to have a single feed into the Hangout, but they would do all the camera management. So they would actually, you know, do the 2-camera, 3-camera shoot, and just feed the on air capability. But then if someone else was in the Hangout and they talked, then they would come to the fore.
So it doesn't really work.
I guess there's ways that you can control some of that, but, anyway, so we'll see where it goes.
Well, you know, I don't know. I have to wear a shirt, you know. I'd rather do this. Shirtless.
I don't even want to know. God, I had a hard enough time shaking the whole boxer image last week. Now I got to shake you shirtless.
Oh, geez.
That's what's so wonderful.
Are you even wearing your man's ear?
it's the imagination, you know, from radio, you know, it's
fire.
That's what it's got going. You conjure up these images.
Theater of the mind does not necessarily have to lead to a nightmare. I'm sorry.
So upcoming events this week. So this Energizing Open Innovation, who put that on the show notes? This looks pretty interesting.
I think that was
Tim. He put that on last week. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. It's an event at the U of M, the Humphrey School.
Yo.
And, you know what? I think I put it on there. Anyway.
I know. Yeah, you're the one who brought this up. Know. Yeah.
It's all the drugs I did in high school. Sorry. Anyway. So.
It's all the drugs I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then Arduino of Minnesota is at 6 p.m. on Thursday, the 26th.
Arduino.
Thanks.
Of Minnesota. But this is a user group or a group that's being started by Justin Grammons. He's very enamored with this device. So
hardware, Internet of Things, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's the Internet of Things. And
Internet of Things.
There's all kinds of stuff that's being made as extensions, like these little gel sensors. So if you've got a sump pump, you can put that in there and connect it up with the Arduino and get notifications by text, for example, that, oh my God, the water's too high.
Better
get home and check it.
That's going to be on the 26th of July. Strangely, the same night as Mini Demo. So,
oh, bummer.
Which is also on July 26th, I noticed.
That's right. That's right.
Come spend a half hour at Arduino of Minnesota and then go to Mini Demo.
Yep.
Did you guys read about the startup that got funded that has like Lego-like hardware?
You know, I saw a piece on that, but I didn't read it. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Forget the name of it. Yeah, Little Bits raised $3.6 million to take its Lego-like electronic toys global. I'll put that in the show notes.
There you go.
Kind of interesting.
Yet another investment.
Yes, yet another. Yeah.
And then you have Lee Oden's book launch scheduled here, which is Optimize How to Attract and Engage More Customers. That's sold out, right?
Yeah. Lee put out, he invited us and other folks, and then he put it out public, and it sold out quickly.
Yep.
It will be fun.
I'm going to have him sign my iPad version.
There you go. Yeah, big
indelible markers.
Yeah, on the back of your iPad case.
Yeah, it'll be an electronic signature, but he'll. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then,
it's a million-dollar idea right there, ladies and gentlemen. Mm. Being able to do an e-signature on a book on an iPad. There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Dollar idea, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
He better get his act together. Lee, if you're listening, you got to do that. That's too good of an idea not to do. Yep.
And then mini demo, of course, on Thursday. And then
they released another batch of tickets. I'm sure they're gone by now, but I saw that there was another batch released.
Yeah, 200 more.
200 was gone because I tried to get somebody to sign up. Now, they might have a third batch. That would be my guess, but who knows? So we'll be at Aria two nights in a row. For Lee Odin's book and then mini demo.
You know, that's a great space. I was at an event there not too long ago. That is just a great space.
Yeah, it is.
It's the old June Loon space.
Yeah. The June Loon.
Yep. The only thing is be very careful if you park outside because of snipers on top of some of the buildings downtown Minneapolis. I've been reading about that. It was on the internet. So it has to be true. I'm kidding. I'm teasing. Come on. I know. What a kidder. And then the data venue thing, that's really shaping up nicely.
Building interest and getting the word out. You know, the MEMA folks are helping to promote it as well now. And because it's of high interest to marketers, this whole personal data thing, and as well as to developers and entrepreneurs. Students are being allowed to come for free in the second afternoon. The second day is like an unconference, whereas the first day is more of the structured talks by Doc Searles and others that are very big in the online identity space.
Right.
But the second day, which is also at Carlson, students and startups are going to be allowed to come for free in the afternoon. But the thing is really cheap anyway. I mean, I think it's $55 for the first day and $25 for the second day, or $75 for both days. So it's pretty reasonable. It will create a lot of attention, I think, with these national prominent thought leaders coming to town. Barb Bowen, the organizers, even invited the Minneapolis mayor's office and the St. Paul mayor's office to come. And she's trying to get some government involvement, too. And I know she was even thinking of getting Eric Paulson and Al Franken to possibly attend or present and talk about the data privacy issues and that sort of thing. But I don't know if that's going to happen yet or not. But there's definitely a policymaker angle to this thing too. And the MHTA people, I'm sure, are going to be promoting the event or listing it on their upcoming calendar.
Yep.
One
thing we forgot to talk about. I'm sorry to bring up one more thing, but Minneapolis 311, which is their information section, for businesses and different phone numbers and how to get a hold of the city and so forth. They came out with a new app, and it's an iPhone and an Android app, where you can do things like report potholes and report street lights that are out and things of that nature. And, some people are slamming it, saying it's kind of cheesy, and others are saying, hey, it's cool because it's simple and, you just want to do a few things. And I think at the end of the day, how great to be able to have something where you can instantly communicate with the city wherever you are. Cause I mean, how many times have you been walking around in Bloomington, Graham, or you in Egan? Cause it's happened to me here in Eden Prairie, where I see something and I want to report it.
Yeah. Potholes, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can find that, especially if they're in the Minneapolis area.
I'll have to get that on my new Android phone that I'm going to get for my wife's T-Mobile account.
Okay.
As soon as I figure out which one I'm going to get for her. But I'm thinking I got to have a Google Nexus. But anyway, this is another story. And
you'll have to talk to Tim.
Yes, I only will do it because I've got to have one for client stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think that 311 app is an excellent idea. And, you know, when we have a tech-savvy mayor like R.T. Ryback, you know, it's only natural that we get that kind of stuff, you know?
Yep.
The Brain Exchange, as he calls the new downtown tech center, you know?
Yeah. Well, now the MHTA is just above COCO.
Is that where they are? They're above it? They're on the fifth floor?
I think they're on the fifth floor.
Okay. Yeah.
Fifth or sixth. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're moved in now, I think.
They are.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
Got to get down there and see that.
Well, gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Steve.
And we will see you next week on
the Men of Eight Gang podcast.
And thank you, Phil, too.
Well, take fines. Be that way.
Take care.
The doctor, he done told me I wouldn't last too long. If my heart was stolen, but I think I